You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Scott Plankenhorn, Boys Basketball Coach at North Medford High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
Derek, I'm doing great. Obviously, troubled times, but we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, so we're doing much better than we had been probably a few months ago.
Yeah, amen to that. Yes, hopefully we'll just keep things will keep getting better, and we'll get to be back in the gym sometime soon.
Exactly.
Coach, I want to say thank you for joining us, first of all, and I'd like to kind of get things started by having you tell us a little bit about your coaching origin story. How did you get involved in coaching, and how did you end up as the head boys coach at North Medford High School?
Okay, perfect. So I graduated North Medford, played 3 years in the late 80s, graduated in 1989, went on to SOU, Southern Oregon University, and played for a year and a half and got hurt and kind of just bowed out and probably made a bad decision there, not finishing everything, but continued to go in school and then, you know, asked if they needed any help at the North with my former coach, and they said, yeah. And obviously then I was just helping with the freshman just as a volunteer, and then all of a sudden the next year they had an opening at the C team level, which is the sophomores or whatever you want to call it, but did that for 7 years, then moved on. When got a new coach, he moved me down to the freshman level and did 3 years there while he was there. And then the next coach, which is Tim Sam, was my AD for a long time and moved me up to JV for a couple of years. And I was his assistant for three. And then he stepped aside, and I thought I was really done because I'm not a teacher. I'm just a family logging business, and it was, seemed like the program wasn't going where kids wanted it, and I was part of it. But some kids said, you know, they really wanted me to step in and take over. And so I asked Coach Sam as AD, is there even a chance? And he goes, there's always a chance. So I applied and fought my butt off and told him, I said, if you do hire me, I'm not leaving. I mean, this is my place. This is where I'm from. And so here we are 15 years later, and I think we've built something pretty cool. And so doing great, but that's how we got here.
Yeah, very cool. Coach, can you talk about, you know, I feel like it was not everybody gets to be an assistant, especially for so long within a program and then take over that program. What was that experience like to, you know, kind of go from being that varsity assistant to then stepping into the head coaching role, and how did you go about kind of making the program your own?
Well, that I think is one of the positive things I've had to do, is because like when I came back, obviously I was playing for coaching for the coach that I, even though it was a C team level and not really assisting with up there, but teaching the program that I had learned to play and all the things and the basics of those and that. And then, you know, when he resigned and left and they brought in a new coach, I was learning a totally different system and something I hadn't been a part of. So for 3 years, just jumping into something I hadn't been a part of. So that was awesome. And then Tim Sam was more of a go back to the Coach Greg stuff. And we did a lot of things that were similar, but at the same time, he was trying to change to what he felt like. And so that was really good. And I felt good, but things just never materialized the way we wanted to. And then, so when I took over, I just really kind of merged all of those that I really felt like I liked, and the college coach that I went and played for the 1 year I really liked and played, and mixed some of that in stuff, and I've just kind of put it all together and found what we really like, and as a coaching staff, because we really talk about it all, it's just not me, more the coaching staff, how we're going to do it and how we like to see it played. And obviously it's not going to be perfect, but that's where we get to. And so we've developed, you know, that we want to play fairly fast, and we want to defend the heck out of people on the man-to-man and go from there.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, your whole coaching career has been at North Medford, 30 years, 15 as the head coach. One of the things that we're seeing a lot now in the coaching profession is coaches don't last very long. There's just a bunch of different pressures and things going on, and they leave the profession, after 5, sometimes 10 years. So what's kind of led to your longevity, both in the profession of coaching and at North Medford?
I don't know what everybody else has obviously go through. I think North Medford's just been a great place for me, and obviously have been a graduate of North Medford. I kind of know as going through it was there, and then as working my way up from Medford, just knowing what it's like to be down here and all those kind of things. But just having a passion and love for the game of basketball, I just can't wait to get in the gym every single day. This pandemic's put definitely a twist on things on how life has gone. But between passion and love, and if you don't have a great family, you don't have a chance. So, I mean, my wife and my kids and all that have let me do what I do, it's been amazing. So I think that's how I've survived for 30 years. It's just continued to just have great love, and we've had amazing kids come through, so that never hurts anything.
Yeah, you talked about a little bit, you know, you're not a teacher, which sometimes can cause, I wouldn't say cause problems, but, you know, it's a little different, right, as far as being on campus and seeing kids.
Yeah, no question. That's probably the hardest part about it is that you're not on campus, and then at the same time, maybe the best part is that you aren't on campus because they're not seeing you and hearing you every day and besides during the season and things that you're doing, but you're not getting bumped every day. But we've done a great job of trying to get some guys back on campus because originally for quite a few years, we didn't have anybody on campus. All the coaches were off-campus coaches, but we now have Coach Tedder who's on campus again, and so we got some contacts there with kids and that kind of thing. But that you're right, that's the chore of being off campus is definitely a chore, but at the same time I do a great job of getting down there and kids know, and then of course you run the entire program all the way through the lower levels in the sixth and seventh grade, so everybody knows who you are instead of just when they hit the varsity level.
Yeah, absolutely. How have you seen basketball change, you know, 30 years of coaching, that's a long time, 3 decades. How have you seen the game change, both maybe schematically and how you approach coaching kids?
Man, the biggest change probably, because obviously when I played, the three-point line came in my junior year. And so really in that 80s, that wasn't even being hardly used at all. I mean, some kids shot it. I think I was the best three-point shooter on my high school team in my senior year, and I shot 75 three-pointers. And I have kids now that are getting close to making 75 in a season. So it's just, and when you start talking about that kind of stuff, that's a huge change because when you're talking about one of the best on one team that's shooting 75 shots, and now you've got kids that are making 60 to 75, maybe even 100 on different teams, you know they're shooting 300 or 400 shots. So it's definitely changed in that way, which makes it more difficult. You've had to adjust on how you play defenses compared to what you used to do. I think kids nowadays can just handle the ball so much better. So the pressure defenses you try to do and stuff, you have to bend adjust a little bit because that ball handler might just shred you and all of a sudden now you're in a bad situation. And then they're shooting a three that they want to shoot anyway. So I think just those little things on how you're actually trying to guard and defend people and still do it the same way that you used to do, but making sure you're taking care of stuff and not giving up a lot of easy ones has kind of changed into things. And, you know, obviously we all hope and someday we'll get a shot clock where at the end of games and all those kind of things, that'll take care of itself because that part of the game I think still hasn't changed a whole lot. You get late and a couple minutes left and someone leads, they're pretty much holding the ball and then now you're going to have to foul.
Yeah, even as your time, I guess even from a C-team coach or a freshman coach, have you had to change or have you changed what you're doing kind of primarily on the defensive or offensive end, the offensive run, to what you're doing now? Is it kind of the same version of what you started with, or if you kind of abandoned what you started with 30 years ago to what you're doing?
So when I took over the C-team team, Coach Greg was the coach, and we were a strict motion team, you know, pass move and hardly ever dribble a basketball. So teaching that and then just tough, physical, man-to-man defense and deny everything. So that's what we did for 7 years. Obviously, I'm teaching the C-team, so I'm teaching kids just the basics, just trying to get them so that they have a chance the next year to bounce and make a team because they weren't the kids that made JV or varsity, so they really have to be taught more on the basics and say, hey, here's how you're going to get a chance. And so you did that, and same thing with a freshman when you're doing that. You're trying to get the basics in there and hopefully put some more stuff in, but the more you put in, the you're almost hurting the kid by not giving him the basics and make sure he's sound. So when he goes up there, that next coach is looking at him going, well, I like that kid because look at all the fundamental stuff he does, and he knows the system and those kind of things. Obviously, now that I'm the head coach, we at the varsity level, we try to mix into whatever our kids can learn. So obviously, we're starting with our basics that we run a little five-out motion, but we run some of the spread that Oregon runs. We've ran some Virginia stuff. So we mix those three things in, but then we have a lot of sets that we try to run. And, again, that all depends on how much knowledge your team has that you can add and keep adding as the season goes on. Some teams can add more, and some teams you'd like, we got to keep it pretty basic just because of how they're learning.
Yeah, how was right way to phrase this question. So because you were able to do coach so much at that sub-varsity level, as the head coach, how has that kind of helped you maybe support those assistants that you have that coach at those levels? Do you feel like you have a specific thing that you ask of them, or how do you kind of help those younger coaches develop in your program?
I think that part of that, that I went through that and saw that how the things worked for each coach coming down and treating everybody and helping and going from that level that to make it work. I think I've taken that and then kind of, you know, put my spin on it. But at the same time, hopefully you've just got the coaches that you want, which has been amazing for me. I've got every level has been a coach that's been there almost as long as I have been now. And so everybody buys in. We, you know, we have our little arguments on different things, but the greatest thing is that as soon as I decide that this is what we're going with, they all completely just buy into it and start teaching it. So you can go down there and do your stuff and make pointers, but, I mean, it's just great to have that at that level where you don't have to worry about it and say, hey, I'm going to pretty much go watch these kids play and support them because I know that the coaches are doing their best and teaching what we're doing. So that's an amazing part, and that's kind of how we do it. We just kind of meet, and we, as a coaching staff, are always meeting and talking about how we want to take these groups and the next groups and do we want to change or do we not want to change, and if we are changing, what are we going to, and why are we going to that? Because we've been pretty successful, so is this going to make us more successful, or are we taking a chance? So it's just been amazing to have the staff I've had, and I think that's part of why we've been able to win so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things, you know, I mentioned your longevity. One of the things that can be difficult when you become a head coach, any coach in general, but more so when you're the head coach, is dealing with parents. How do you go about, you know, dealing with parents and parental issues in your program?
Yeah, so obviously, when I initially, obviously, when you're sub teams, you're only dealing with, you know, you're dealing with parents that are sometimes happy that their kids are even on teams. So there isn't a lot. Obviously, when you have to cut a kid, you're always almost going to have somebody that didn't agree with you, which is the worst part about basketball is, you know, you're going to have to cut kids if you have more kids show up. So, you know, football, they can just keep running out uniforms as long as they have them and put everybody out there. But basketball, you know, you're pretty much 10 or 12 kids, and you get too many more than that, you're pushing your limits. So you just continue to work with that and make sure that they have all their chances. But, yeah, as far as the parents, we kind of have a meeting right before the season, and we give them a little handout, and we let them know that once they've made the team that, you know, realistically 7, 8, maybe 9 are going to get the majority of the playing time. And so if you're in the 10, 11, 12, or even the ninth guy spot, it's not that we don't want you on the team. We need you on the team, and you might be the most important player on the team, but you aren't going to probably see a bunch of playing time. So we ask them to sign that, and then we let them know that, you know, during the season, if you have any questions or anything, just come in and we can talk and we can meet. Just try not to do it during game times or right after games, because those things are high intensity, high situations, and it's just not easy to calm down and start talking about something that can be easily talked about the next day. So So those are kind of where we're at, and you hope that you know parents are going to deal the right way, and we're only going to talk about their kid and not everybody else, and because playing time is really a decision by the coaching staff on who's earning it and how they've done and what they've done, and there's nobody there that's watching every day. Even if a parent showed up to watch something, you're only seeing a little portion of it. It's not every day what is going on. So that kid's earned what he's earned, and sometimes we're wrong, and most of the time we're right. But we're not perfect, so sometimes we miss it too. So, but you just have those meetings, and you kind of communicate when you have to, and been lucky that for 15 years as a head coach, I haven't had to have a million meetings.
Right. Do you feel like those conversations or have either diminished or gotten better between your first year as head coach to now after you've kind of built a successful program where people know what's expected?
To be honest, being the first guy and I think the kids really at that time really were excited that I was the guy. So I didn't really have a whole lot of parent issues initially. I mean, I've had a couple parents come in and just talk about miscellaneous things early. But as we went on, you know, then you finally get to where you're established. But at the same time, people are looking at it going, well, okay, my kid, what about my kid? And where's my kid fit in? And how come my kid's not playing? And so you'll end up with, you know, some parents coming in and you just have to lay it out there, and they might not agree, and that's okay, but at the same time, you just have to let them know where you're coming from and what we feel like that kid's earned at that time, and it's never fun because, you know, as being a dad myself, I know where I am as a parent. It's different. I'm 100% invested in my kid. I'm not invested in that basketball team when I'm watching. I'm invested in my kid, and in fact, my kid's even told me that. I'm better when I'm actually coaching him than I am as a parent up in the stands. And I told him, I said, well, think about this. When I'm coaching you or sitting on the bench helping coach your team at the lower levels, I am coaching 10 kids, and I'm part of 10 kids. When I'm sitting in the stands, I'm part of one, and I'm watching one. You know, I'm not watching – I'm watching all 10, but at the same time, I'm just fixated on you as one. So – you know, my critiques get a little bit harsher because I'm sitting up there, but as compared to when I'm on the bench and I'm now critiquing 10 kids and teaching 10 kids. So, yeah, you're not getting the full 100%.
Yeah. You know, for maybe younger coaches or coaches that are just getting into the profession, anything that you've done with parents specifically or even in general, that you would suggest not doing? Any mistake you made that we can all learn from together as a coaching professional?
The game day stuff is the biggest one because those are all the things that I've ever had really not go right were right after a game or right exactly when you're walking off the court or any of those kind of things. That's where you just have to have the ability to say, hey, can we just schedule a meeting for tomorrow? Because 90% of the time, you're going to definitely be much calmer to answer the questions, and you hope that they've now calmed down and maybe even talked to their kid, who's probably going to be a little bit more on your side than the parent even knows. So when you meet, it's more of a discussion instead of if you come right out of a, you know, especially if you're lost, I mean, you put your heart and soul into that team and you're trying to win a game and then you lose and then you walk out and all of a sudden you see a parent wanting to go after you. It's like, you know, you're just like a cat in a corner. So you almost say, I'm ready to go too. Let's do this. And that's never a good situation. So if you always make that meeting, like if you meet before the season, just let parents know that we're not going to talk after games and all those kind of things because it's never going to be a good situation. So let's make sure we're always going to schedule meetings for the next day or whatever day works for everybody to discuss it, and we will be more than happy to do it. And hopefully you walk out of those feeling a little bit better, even if you don't agree.
Right. Yeah, a night's sleep can do a world of help in
yeah.
those situations.
Exactly.
Coach, how do you guys measure success in your program? What does that look like?
Well, you know, when I was trying to get the job, we came up with a vision statement, and we just kind of we stick with that, and it's not a perfect measure, but we just read it. We're just trying to teach a group of individuals to have passion, toughness, discipline, and love for the game of basketball as well as each other. And the coaching staff, that's what we preach every day, that if we can just, you know, to teach these kids the game of basketball and hopefully teach them to have some passion and love for it, and then the bigger end is that they have some passion and love for each other as a group, I think we're doing a really good job. And then on the back part of that is, you know, being a churchgoer and a lover of Jesus Christ, that the reap what you sow is in my brain, so I came up with to use a little basketball term, so we put the reef part is respect, effort, attitude, and being prepared, and that will work into you a successful, outstanding winner. And we make sure that we say winner, not winning, because you don't always get the win. But if you do those things with respect, effort, attitude, and be prepared, you will be successful, and you'll be outstanding, you'll be a winner. And sometimes that's when you're losing, you can still be a winner. It's about how you took that loss. So, and hopefully to build those kids, that's where you're at. And obviously you'd love to win basketball games while you're doing that, but we all can't win all the time, and you can't win every game. So to build those kind of building blocks are where we initially start.
Yeah. How do you, and this is a tough question, but it's something I think that we all as coaches are want to be better at. You know, how do you teach those things? Is it just situation by situation? Do you have some sort of system in place when you talk about, you know, the kind of that respect, passion, love for one another? Are there things that you do in particular to help teach those things? Or is it kind of just when it arises, you try to teach it and emphasize it in those situations?
Yeah, I think you try to start with it. And obviously we do. You know, being a longtime basketball guy, obviously everybody knows John Wooden. So we have a variation of his pyramid that we made, that we sat down with kids probably 7, 8, 9 years ago and kind of made our own little, you know, pyramid off of his that, you know, made sense for North Medford and the kind of things that we were going to preach within our little system and our little high school corridor. And so we took that, and then you just kind of start with that early and work through some of those things. But you're going to always have things arise that you've never talked about before, and then you have to go with it right there and say, hey, here's how we would have done it. And that might not even be perfect, but definitely the way you went at it probably wasn't the right way. So, and we had that last year. We North Medford, South Medford, we're ultimate rivals, and we didn't have a good situation, a little scuffle, and so it didn't go the right way, and we had to all handle it together and move forward. And the next time we played, we had a very competitive game, but there were no issues. So it's just one of those things. Sometimes you have to learn on the fly. You would like to hopefully take care of all those situations before they do, but there's no way to do it. You just hopefully have talked about as many as you can. And then when something new arises, you hopefully make the best plan to move forward and take care of it.
Yeah. Good stuff, Coach. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Plankenhorn right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The start of school means it's time to sign up or renew your Oregon Basketball Coaches Association membership. OBCA membership includes access to exclusive resources that help personalize instruction, understand players' mindsets, and maximize the impact of your practices. Members also receive access to the OBCA mentoring program and have a voice in improving the game at the state level. Membership starts at just $15 a year. Register online today at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here, talking with Coach Scott Plankenhorn. Coach, if someone were to come watch your practice, let's say it's me or somebody else, we're not scouting. We're just going to come watch your practice because we want to see what's going on. What would we see and what would we hear you saying in that practice?
We'd hopefully walk out that you would say that, man, that's a high-energy group. A lot of the stuff we do is quick moving stuff and moving from segment to segment. and it's all planned and the coaches are all locked in. And so, you know, that part, high energy, positivity, I struggle with that. I mean, I do my best. I'm trying to stay positive all the time, but that's one of my struggles is I'm always pushing. Sometimes, you know, a negative thing comes out, but the goal is to be as positive as possible. And I would hope, you know, being from my mentor, Coach Greg, that you would hopefully walk out and say, man, they're team-oriented and defensive-oriented within the team. So those are things that you'd hope you'd walk out of there with, just feeling that they're high energy, positive, and a team on both ends, and then especially on the defensive end.
Do you have any phrases or sayings that you say quite often in practice? You know, I joke about, you know, my last name's Doom, so I call them like Doomanisms, like things that I hear myself saying over and over again. Or, you know, you call them like Woodenisms, right, for John.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I would hear you say often or that you find yourself saying over and over again to your kids?
Man, I am not sure. I thought I'd better coach for your assistant coaches that are listening to you all the time. but yeah, I don't know. I'm constantly talking about, you know, jumping the ball defensively. That's one of the major ones we're preaching is, you know, jump to the ball. And so you're probably hearing that and probably hearing get back on defense a lot, you know, get back and then move it, you know, or move the ball, move you something and share it. Those are things we're always talking about because we were, like I said, really team oriented on both ends. We always like to see as many guys score as possible, but within, you know, the system, we're still going to obviously dictate who's shooting more than the other kids at sometimes, but the whole system is built to get everybody some touches and move the basketball and get that best shot possible. So, you know, I'm probably saying move the ball and that kind of stuff without even knowing it, but yeah, not sure if I have my like signature saying without obviously coaches or assistant coaches laughing at me and telling me what that actually is.
Yeah. I'm sure if I asked one of them, they'd have a couple of that.
Oh, they probably have a whole bunch of them.
Coach, you talked about defense. You know, I know we've played each other, and I've always thought your defenses were very tough and made things hard on us. I think one of the hard things to do, especially nowadays, with like you had mentioned in the first segment, everybody being better with the ball, I think players are just a little more skilled than they used to be. How do you get players to buy in to your defensive system to get them to play the tough and physical way that you want them to?
Yeah, from day one, you just we're seriously just preaching it that this is what we're going to lean on, and then if we tell them from day one. That's the day one when I took over the job. That's what I told kids was right off the get go is that if you defend to the hardest ability that you can have in the way that we want to defend, I'm going to allow you to shoot some shots that may not be smart. Not that way I want you to shoot them, but, you know, if you've earned the right by the way you're playing defense and doing it the right way and playing it as hard as you can, you might come down and shoot one. I'm going to ignore it a little bit compared to it, that next guy that if you're not guarding and your guy's scoring all the time and you're not helping and you're not in help spots and you go down and jack one, yeah, you're probably coming out. So, and that's just been our philosophy. And, you know, not everybody gets it all the time, and there's a lot of people that wonder what's going on, but that's usually what's going on. That kid that's, you know, defending his tail off and doing it the right way and doing, you know, all of our principles that we have listed on the wall, and it's not that complicated. There's only like six or seven of them. That if you're doing most of those, I'm going to allow some stuff on the other end that maybe the next kid doesn't get, and that's, you know, maybe not fair, but that's, you know, life isn't fair sometimes. So that's just how you earn your stripes. And so those are where we start, and we just break it down a lot. I don't know how much we break down compared to other people, but we do a lot of defense and breakdowns and footwork and those kind of things, and try to get the kids to take pride in that too. So we give them some drills that are theirs and say, hey, this is your drill. We're going to step out and kind of watch, and you guys run this, even though it's a defensive drill that we want to see it ran really well. We sell it to them that, hey, this is yours. You got to get this done. You got 5 minutes and see how they do it. So,
Coach, being in Southern Oregon, you know, you and I have talked about this before, pregame or summer ball can be tough as far as, you know, scheduling, especially in the non-league, right? Just getting teams to come down and play you, you spend a lot of time on the road. How do you kind of manage that with your preseason scheduling, and then manage that with your players, with spending so much time on the bus and maybe spending time out of school? How do you kind of handle that?
Yeah, so the school thing obviously is the hardest part, because, you know, you hopefully have very academic kids that are going to take care of themselves, but there's always a few that, you know, that part of being away all the time puts a kink in them keeping their grades up, which is now becomes the chore, because now you're trying to get them back on schedule, and then all of a sudden you're traveling again, and now you're getting farther behind. So that's the biggest one, and obviously being an off-campus coach makes that a little more difficult, but again, you know, we preach it, and I've got a guy on campus that can take a look and keep track of people, and they do a great job of letting me know where kids are. But from there, we start right off the get-go saying that we're going to play anybody anywhere and anytime, and hopefully we want to get tough travel and tough turnarounds where sometimes it's back-to-back-to-back or however it works out, and, you know, and maybe on the road and we have to stay in a hotel, and hopefully some tough environments, because – if you really want to win something special, that's what you're going to have to go through to get there. You can't always have it in your own little building and do it from there. So we just tell kids right there that our goal is to play anybody anywhere and anytime, and hopefully we're going to play some tough people in tough places, and it might not go our way, but it's hopefully pushing us so that we have a chance when we do something really good at our end down here and win enough games that we get home games. Now they have to travel down here for playoffs, and all of a sudden we're doing something good and getting to that state tournament where you have a chance to make a run and win a state title, even though we haven't done that. We've been there several times and got some trophies, so we just haven't got the ones we wanted to get. But that's another thing we talk about. You know, if that's the only thing you're searching for at the end of the day is that state title, your pyramid's not going to last very long because it's upside down and going to tumble on itself.
Yeah, how do you handle that, too, with, you know, scouting your opponents? I know, obviously, Huddle and Crossover have kind of helped with that. But, I mean, do you find difficulty in trying to maybe scout teams you're going to play and getting your teams prepared for when you play them?
Yeah, so originally, obviously, 15 years ago when I was starting out as the head coach, yeah, I didn't have hardly any connections with anybody. And not to say that I have a million now, but we really went into the preseason against teams up north just blind, and we talked to kids and told them, and it was, you know, more about what we taught the kids and said, hey, this is how we're going into it. This is all about us. I don't even care what they do or how they do it, because this is how we play and how we do it, and this is how we guard this action. No matter what the action is, they're going to run, and this is, we already have taught you how to guard it, so you just guard it, and then within as much information as we can get, hopefully we get some, we'll share it. But there might be a game where we don't have nothing. And that doesn't mean you can lose the game just because you have nothing. I mean, that comes down to you got to play to your ability on how we're going to play and how we're going to do it. And it's much more about us than that other opponent. As I've been coaching, we've been able to, obviously, like you said, with Huddle and Crossover and other coaches that we've made some connections with, have been able to get some films on people and at least give us a little bit of a chance to see what people might be doing before we head into some games. But really big believer in that it's more about you and what you're doing than what that other team is doing.
As the head coach, we talked about a little bit about your program and with your other coaches within your program, but I think one of the things that you guys have done really well is kind of built your program. You talked about all the way down to the 6th, 7th, 8th grade levels. How do you kind of balance your time between being the varsity head coach and serving your youth and your younger levels to kind of prepare them for that varsity level?
Yeah, so, you know, at our level, obviously, I've been taking care of the varsity, but then for us, you know, the JV, since we only got 3 teams now, like I said, in the old days there were 5 teams, so I don't even know how, I mean, coaches that are doing those up there that have 4 or 5 teams, not sure how they're handling, but we're down to 3, so for me, it is a lot more basic than it has been, because for us, we only got the 2 gyms, and gym time's very tight already with sharing everything, so, and our big gym is very big, so it's a nice main gym, one of the best in the state. So we actually practice varsity and JV together, every day, almost as many days as we can. Sometimes we'll swap them out and make them practice with the freshmen a little bit and let us have some time by ourselves. But we, for the most part, our varsity and JVs are together, so I'm seeing the sub-varsity kids there almost all the time, trying to let the JV coach do what he can do and be the JV coach, but at the same time, as our staff of four or five guys that are we're working that whole program of 20, 24 kids as hard as we can as one unit, and then obviously when we separate into team stuff, then we're going varsity and JV. But we do a lot of scrimmaging against each other or in and out and let you have some rest and some things like that. But, you know, trusting that freshman coach that he's up there by himself with some coaches and go up there and make sure yourself seen and try not to step on his toes and let him know, hey, here's what we're doing down there. And he's just a great guy about absolutely taking whatever we're doing and trying to mingle it with what the freshmen are too much for them. And if it's not, then he's going to put it in. If he feels like it's a little bit too much, then he'll keep it away from them until he feels like they're ready. And then for 6th, 7th, and 8th, we actually, as a coaching staff, run the tryouts initially and help pick some of the teams. We don't pick the teams with them, but we'll talk with whoever the coaches or parents are that are going to be on those and kind of say, hey, here's what we see, and we like that kid and this kid. And then I also just let them know that if they need anything on any of those practice times when I'm not doing anything, I'm more than happy to come in and show you what we're doing and let you know that's going there and then see if we can't get some time down there and watch them play. And when I got, you know, there's not a lot of free time, but if there's any free time, I try to at least get down and see some of the games. It's helped the last 4 or 5 years. Obviously, my kid's now a 9th grader, so I've actually been, like you said, kind of coaching through the ranks, helping his teams. Being on the bench, which has, you know, helped me be around some of the other kids too, because now I'm seeing more games because I'm there and there's, you know, a little break and some other 6th grade teams playing or 7th grade teams playing. So I see them. But, you know, it's just hopefully you get some parents to buy in down there that are at least trying your stuff. But the crazy thing is we did just kind of finally get away from saying, hey, we demand you do this and demand you do that, and get frustrated when they're not doing it. Because they're doing whatever they feel comfortable with at the end of the day. And so we just have told them, hey, we play probably 90% man-to-man, and if you don't feel comfortable that you can win like that, then that's what it is, but you're just doing a disservice to that kid because when he gets there, he's going to play man. He's going to have to know how to play it. And then, you know, we like to share the ball, move the ball, but at the same time, we like to pick and choose who scores the basketball sometimes too. So if you got a stud that's going to score 20, 25, get in 20 or 25. There's no reason why the other kids don't understand that's the go-to guy. And then, you know, when he gives you the ball, take your chance and get a good look. So, but yeah, that part is difficult to just let them trust down there and know that even if they didn't do it anywhere close to what your program looks like, they've given kids a chance to play, and when they get there to that 9th grade, you just trust your 9th grade coach that he's going to put a perfect program in that's going to run for 4 years all the way through.
Yeah, analytics, switching gears a little bit here, you know, analytics have had a huge impact on the game, have changed the game a ton. You know, you talked about, first segment about, you know, you took 75 threes your senior year, and kids are making that many threes in a season now. I'm curious, how do you use analytics in your program to maybe help give you an idea of how you're performing and maybe give feedback to players?
Yeah, so we obviously keep as many stats as we can. We've been lucky that as I was coming up, my uncle Don was a statistician when I was playing, and then he did it forever, and then we had a couple other guys step in and do it. Now we got a parent keeping stats that we have all the shooting, rebounds, assists, steals. Everything that we want tracked right there is being tracked. And then, of course, Crossover, which is huddled now, so hopefully it'll be this very similar, because I've been using Crossover for 4 or 5 years. That they shoot those numbers back to you, man, and you can really break some stuff down and hand it to a kid and say, hey, look at this. Here's your hot spots. Here's your cold spots. And go from there with that kind of stuff and say, hey, if there's any chance, you know, within the offense that you can get a shot from this area, obviously you're shooting 60% and you're kind of shooting 20% from this area for some reason. Maybe it's just luck of the numbers, but right now that's not doing very good. So maybe stay away from that area when you can. So those are interesting analytics that you can get. And then we have my freshman coach, when he's done, he comes down and he keeps a possession chart, which is huge for us. And we, you know, each game is going down and each quarter, for both teams and what happened and how many times did they score, where did they score, when they score, how many times did we get stops in a row. So at halftime, you know, he hands me that, and sometimes I throw it back at him. I'm not a very nice guy, but, you know, sometimes he hands it to me and I'm like, I already know what happened. I don't need to look at this stupid thing, you know. But, there, you know, I'll calm down and start looking at it and go, yeah, we just look at that. We didn't score for six possessions in a row. No wonder we're losing. You have to get baskets at some point, you know, and then you have to get stops. But what we're leading to those, and were they turnovers, were they missed free throws, you know, sometimes it's just missed shots. And so what were those shots? Were they bad ones or quick ones? And so that little thing can sure help. And then we take a look at the end of the day, and after games we can sit down with the kids and say, hey, we had the ball 60 times and we scored 50 points. So that's, you know, whatever it is, point something, and our goal is to be 1 point something. So we sit down and let them know that. And then I'm big on points per shot for kids. So, you know, I'm telling them that you need to be in that 1.33 to 1.5 range if you want to be a good player, or even higher at the high school level. But, you know, you're taking five shots, you should be getting 7 or 8 points, not four. And if you're only getting four, then you probably should start thinking about the shots you're taking. And then, you know, I helped one of our best players ever come through, Tristan Holmes, was really asking on how, you know, how do I get so many points a game and all that kind of stuff. And I just really looked at him and said, it's more about the quality of stuff that you do instead of how much you do. And because I told him, I said, here, think about it this way. You're our best player, so you're going to get to shoot the ball a lot. But if you make 1-2 a quarter, I mean, he's smart. I'm like, how many points you got? And he's like, 8. I'm all, well, if you make 1-3 a half because you have that ability, how many points you got now? You got 6 and 8, and I got 14. I'm all, well, if you get fouled and shoot 5 or 6 free throws and you make most of them, how many? He's like, well, I'll go 4 or 5, 4 or 6. I'm all, yeah, now what are you at? 18 points a game. I'm all, woo. There aren't many people that are going to average 18 points a game. And look, you only made 6 baskets and 4 free throws, and you don't have to jack the ball all the time. If you're playing the majority of the minutes and you only need to make a basket or two a quarter, it's not about how many times you did it. It's about when you did it and what you did. So those are kind of things that we talk about. And obviously the crossover video and being able to stop and shot and show all the shot charts and what you're doing has definitely helped on those kind of things for kids. I don't know how much they take into it sometimes, but as a coach, you can definitely take a look and sit down and point those out.
Right. And sometimes those conversations, I think, at least in my experience, it's easier to have some hard evidence to back up that playing time decision, right? Hey, you're shooting 20% from the field. You know, like that.
Yeah, exactly, because sometimes you say that. You go, hey, you're shooting 20% from the field, and they go, what do you mean? And it's like, well, you're shooting 5 times and got 1 point. And this other kid's shooting 5 times out of 10 points. Who do you want me to put on the floor? I mean, that's not complicated, is it? If you're both taking 5 shots and he's getting 10, you're getting 1. I mean, we got to change that if you want to play more.
For sure. For sure. Coach, I'm going to end this segment talking about, strange year dealing with the pandemic. You know, we're going to have a 6-week season, fingers crossed. It's going to be, I think, a mix between summer ball and winter ball. How have you kind of been keeping your kids engaged during this time? And, have you talked to your staff? I mean, what kind of plans do you have in dealing with this kind of weird season that we're going to have here in the coming spring?
Yeah, so obviously initially right after, because that was, you know, state tournament time and people were trying to win a title right when it got cut loose, and that obviously it had to be devastating for all those teams that were so close. I know I even thought about it because we were playing, I thought we were a team that might make a state tournament, and when we didn't do it and then you were devastated and then all of a sudden the state tournament got canceled, you're like, man, was it better that we didn't even make it then? Because at least we're not up there and like, hey, what just happened? But it's been a heck of a long year, that's for sure, dealing with all the situations and going realistically, you know, just letting kids know, hey, stay safe and do what you can in March, April, May, in June, almost all of June, we just kind of trying to keep in touch with kids and saying, stay safe and protect yourself, protect your family. And if you get a chance to shoot somewhere outside or do some workouts, you know, try to do those. And then we were lucky enough in the end of June to be allowed to go outside and meet. And we hooked up with the football team, which was amazing. The football coach and I kind of got together and said, hey, if we just do all this together, we're allowed 100 kids. We share a multiple amount of kids between the two teams anyways. So we were out on the football field just doing some basic stuff, but having, you know, that 50 to 100 kids allowed and doing that. And so we ran that through middle of July before we were allowed back in the gym. And then once we were allowed back in the gym, we were sharing kids with the football team and everybody else. And I think we were running right around 24 kids every day showing up and doing our stuff and doing our shooting stuff. Obviously, we couldn't play basketball, which made it difficult. But shooting and dribbling and some 5-on-0 where you didn't get close to each other, at least talking through some stuff. And then, of course, we got shut down again. And that, I think that's when it made it really difficult, because the initial shutdown, everybody was like, okay, you know, it wasn't good, but at least we're new. But then we start going, and then all of a sudden we're shut down again, and we're not playing, and now we've got a schedule that's going to be in December, but we're not even going to the gym right now. How are we going to be playing in December? So obviously we know that that ended up being the no-go. So we've been just trying to, you know, stay positive with the kids. It's a tough time for them as much as it is for your, as a coach. I mean, I know it's double for them because, like I said, I don't know if I've ever went this long not being in the gym since I was in high school. I mean, just absolutely never be in the gym for that many months on end. Being a basketball player, I was trying to think back to like my junior year, sophomore year, where I played baseball and I pretty much concentrated on baseball for that 3 or 4 or 5 months. I said, man, I think that might have been the longest, but I said, even then, I bet I got in the gym to shoot somewhere at some time during that stretch. To just absolutely be a, I mean, it's difficult and hard, and kids are feeling it, and you're just trying to stay as positive with them as possible. They've lived through this, and it's hard on them. So, but as far as our coaches, we kind of just talk it out, and we haven't got much of a plan yet, because we just, you know, we're waiting to even see if we're going to get to play. We're all excited and positive that we're going to play, but, man, we haven't talked a whole lot about what we want to do and how we're going to do it in a 6-week span, because if you do play, what, you got a week to practice before you play? I mean, you have to hope your system's in and kids trust what you're doing already, and all the things you've built are solid. But at the same time, it's going to be well over a year since they've done any of it. So it'll be crazy for sure. And I'm probably 100% sure that the basketball won't be the greatest in that stretch, but at least we'll be back playing.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we return, Coach Plankenhorn will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Scott Plankenhorn, boys basketball coach at North Medford High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock. I'm going to put 35 seconds on a timer and ask you some rapid-fire questions that should have about 1 to 2 word answers, and we're going to see how many questions we can get through in that 35 seconds. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. 35 seconds on the timer starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes, we definitely need that, and it would be enhance the game for sure.
Should it be implemented at the sub-varsity levels?
I'm not sure about that, but definitely at the varsity level, we need it.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
I think less than 5.
How big of a lead do you need before you call off a press?
I think that kind of depends on how the game's going and who you're playing and the feeling to have what you have, but somewhere in that 20 to 25 range.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Wow, Hoosiers probably up there.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
Wow, pregame meal. Probably back in the day with steak and potatoes. I'm not sure, being diabetic now, probably fish.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Animated.
Good. There it is. That's good. Animated is good, Coach. I like that. usually the answer is intense, but I think animated is another good answer to that question.
Well done.
Good possession. Coach, obviously, you know, I call it the shot clock segment. It's kind of a fun way to get some answers to quick questions, but I call it that because, you know, the shot clock's a hot topic issue.
Yes.
In high school basketball. You had mentioned you're in favor of it. Can you kind of expound on your reason for being in favor of it?
Yeah, I think it enhanced the game, and I don't think it, the way most people are playing now, I mean, even the teams that are really slowing it down in our league, I don't know about other leagues, but within our league where you play twice and you have a lot of film on people, even the teams that are slowing it down are still shooting the ball within the 35 to 45 second range. I mean, rarely do they ever pass the ball around and not shoot within 35 seconds. What I think will benefit the game, because like you said, no one's not shooting that fast, so they're going to basically be within the shot clock and they can still run their offenses that they're running, and they might have to pick up the pace a tad, but not a ton. They can still control pace of play, but the biggest thing is at the end of quarters, at the end of the game, it's such a big thing when, you know, you're down 5 or 6 with 2 or 3 minutes to go and the team yanks it. You know, if you're not the greatest defensive team, you can't just go out there and say, I'm going to press them and turn them over. And what happens is you go press them, and then they throw it and get a layup, and now you're down 7 or 8, and now you're one basket from being done. Where if you have a shot clock and you're down 5 or 6, you say, you can hold it all you want out there, and then we're going to try to guard the best we can for that last 10 seconds and get a rebound, and hopefully we're still down 5, and now, you know, we're a basket with being in one possession, and if that one possession is still outside the shot clock, I can just guard again instead of having to foul, because that's the hardest part of the game. And, you know, believe it or not, my wife doesn't know a whole lot about basketball, but that's the part of the game she just doesn't get either. She was like, why are you holding it? You know, well, because we want to win, so we're not going to shoot anymore. And so they're going to come foul us, and we're going to give it to our best player, and he's going to go hopefully make 80 or 90%, and then we just guard a little bit, and the game's over. So I would hope that at some point we move to the shot clock, and it doesn't have to be, you know, super long, 35, 30. You know, I know Washington, I think, plays with 35. I'm not sure what California plays with, but we've played some games up there in California Washington with the shot clock in a regular season game, and I thought it was just amazing. We had one shot clock violation in both games, and we forced one in each game. And we had that choice with about a minute 30 to go and down 5 to just play defense and see if we could get a stop instead of, you know, chasing them around and hoping we get a steal. And then, you know, wherever you dictate that under 45 or under 30, you start fouling. We didn't have to do that. You could get a stop and give yourself a chance to win by scoring some baskets.
Yeah. How do you go about selecting team captains?
Usually, to be honest, usually our point guard, because I've been a point guard all my life. And I just feel like that he's the extension of what hopefully I've taught and talked to him the most about stuff, that he is going to be one of the senior captains or captains. And then, you know, the kid that, you know, the other kids look to, and hopefully put him out there. That's kind of been the philosophy. You don't just throw kids out there. It's going to be, you know, like I said, usually going to be a senior point guard just because of the, hey, this is a kid I'm going to talk to most of the time about things. He's going to be the one I'm communicating defenses and offenses with. So hopefully he's got good demeanor and can be the guy that can be out there with the talking to the referees and those kind of things and gathering the team. But then there's always that second kid or third kid that you just know that the team kind of looks to. And even in the tough times, maybe he's the one, if it's not the point guard, he's the one that's grabbing everybody and saying, hey, here's where we're at. So you'd like to put him out there. But usually it's decided by me. I don't let the team do too many of that kind of things. Mm-hmm. So,
do you give your captains any sort of job responsibilities after being named captain?
Not a whole lot, besides obviously they got to go out there and then control the – you know, the team during the game and those kind of things. But nothing like major, like, hey, you got to dictate this or that and that kind of stuff.
When you do your kind of those player-led drills you were mentioning earlier, do you kind of turn that over to the captains, or is it just the whole team that does it together?
Usually that's going to be, you know, that's that one that the captain or your, you know, the guy that leads the most, you say, hey, we're in this drill, you got it, and he'll get everybody lined up and get going and kind of talk everybody through it. Usually there's not a complicated, usually it's more of a high-energy drill. So that's pretty easy for him to get everybody organized and go. But that's going to be that guy that's, you know, kind of looked to as the guy, even though he might not even, sometimes he's not even a captain, but he's the guy that everybody looks to and goes.
Right. Speaking of drill, do you have a favorite drill that you guys do?
Our favorite drill we call recognition. It's a 4 or 5 man drill, and it's fast break drill where you go back and forth, and we can do it with the entire program is what we like. So we can bring the freshmen down and intermingle everybody, and, you know, it's just an advantage break kind of stuff where, you know, sometimes you're 4-on-1, you know, 4-on-2, 4-on-3, 4-on-4, and we're teaching, trying to recognize the numbers. And obviously if you're high advantage, we need to get a layup or maybe an easy 3. And then if we're even, we can still attack, but then once we didn't get something off the initial attack, that we need to move the basketball and get the best shot possible. And so we can play that with varsity versus JV or intermingle our varsity and JV teams. And then sometimes for a fun, you know, program thing, we bring all the freshmen down and intermingle everybody and put the thing on the score clock and keep a time and keep a score. And, you know, losers are going to have some kind of punishment and winners are going to be excited that they don't have to do it. So that's by far our favorite drill that I think if you walked in and asked kids what drill they want to run, that's probably going to be, you know, the kids that have been around the program the most, they're going to say, can we do recognition?
Yeah. Do you have a favorite team bonding activity that you guys do?
You know, we do a lot of, hopefully, and it's not every year. Sometimes they just don't, you know, want to be that bonded, which is not good, but, you know, but team dinners, we try to do as many of those as we can. And then I don't know if we hit this last year for some reason, but maybe even a couple of years, but we like to do a bowling night and mm-hmm. and try to surprise the kids on that. I know that's one of the ones that probably was as highly successful as anything right during the middle of the season. I mean, we still needed wins. And I think we had a couple of days to prepare for somebody, and we showed up to practice. And we got a couple captains over there and said, you know, I think 4 captains, in fact, and said, hey, you got to draft teams of these 20 guys, you know, and didn't tell them that we're going bowling. You know, they're drafting teams. We're on the basketball court. We're all suited up for practice. And they drafted their teams, and I said, all right, hopefully these guys are good bowlers. And they're, what? We're all going bowling. We're meeting down at the bowling lanes, and we're going to go bowl for a while. So, and I think we were going to just bowl 1 game. I think it turned into 2, if not even 3, just everybody having a good time down there bowling. So that's probably one of our best things. And something we just talked about, we said, yeah, it feels like we didn't do that last year or the year before, so maybe we need to make sure we get back to that this year.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, do you do anything, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, long bus rides, whether it's preseason or even your league, right? You're having to go up to Eugene a couple times a year. Do you do anything structured on the bus rides up there? Either for team bonding purposes or just for preparation?
For Eugene, not really, because what we do is the structure part is that we're going to be on the bus and we're going to be as quiet as we can. And Canyonville is about an hour, and so we know that we're going to get off at Canyonville. We're going to jump into the Seven Feathers restaurant area store and let them get whatever they need to snack on or drink and back on the bus. And it's probably another hour and a half, and we're at Eugene, and if it's Roseburg, it's only about half hour, 45 minutes, so we kind of just split it up that way. I know my freshman coach likes to hand out some packets to the kids on what he's got. We've usually already, you know, talked enough about our guys that we're just trying to let them enjoy some time and rest up and think about whatever they want to think about as we're heading up there, especially as varsity, because they're going to get there way before game time. They're going to have time to shoot before the JV play. Then they're going to have to sit and watch the JV game and all those things. Because so far travel, you can't do the, hey, we'll show up mid JV game, go get dressed and that kind of stuff. So they're definitely watching JV and freshman games, which is bonding for the whole program, but it definitely makes it difficult for a varsity kid that you don't have any, those other options that some other teams bring when they can just show up right across town or something.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I think that's all I have for you today. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and let's hope we definitely get a chance to play this 6-week season, even if it's only 6 weeks. I know the kids will be excited about getting a chance to play, and then we can just move forward from there, hopefully.
Absolutely. If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Plankenhorn, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.